talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn. Sooner or later, gotta cut
you down. Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. And I'll tell you what today is. Today is Tuesday. Today is 5 weeks to the day. 5 weeks to the day before the general election for the Supreme Court seat, which will be held April 4. And whoever wins, they'll be sworn in probably early August, first week in August. And they will sit on the court for 10 years. That's right, 10 years, a decade. And depending on who wins, we will have an end to gerrymandering, or we will have gerrymandering reinforced. Depending on who wins, if Janet Protasiewicz wins, not only will we have an end to gerrymandering, we'll also have a court that will certify whoever wins the 2024 presidential election, Democrat or Republican. Straight up, that's the way it will be. If Kelly wins, we'll have 10 more years of gerrymandering, and we will have a certification of the Republican candidate in 2024, even if the Democrat wins. I can't get any starker than that. I cannot get any starker than that. There are a couple of very favorable signs. First of all, in the primary election between Janet Protasiewicz, Everett Mitchell, both of them deemed the liberal candidates, they got 54% of the vote. Janet Protasiewicz got about 46%. Everett Mitchell got about roughly 7%. So there's a hunger in this state for a change. There's a hunger in the state for a change. And I was very glad to see the following. Believe it or not, Dane County is a much smaller county than Milwaukee County, right? Dane County had several thousand more votes in that primary election on February 21st than Milwaukee County. That's because Dane County votes in massive numbers compared to the rest of the state. Very proud of them. Very glad to see it. Very glad to see it. About 36% of the eligible voters in Dane County voted in a February primary election. That's unheard of. There are plenty of areas in the state where it's 10% or 12%. In Milwaukee County, it was 26%, which is huge, huge, but it's not 36%. And as a result, Dane County came out with a few thousand more votes than Milwaukee County. But Dane County, in my view, did the right thing. It looked at the stronger candidate. And that is a major reason why Janet Protasiewicz, who will get rid of gerrymandering, will certify the actual winner of the 2024 election, will rule unconstitutional the application of an 1849 statute, which is 174 years old, passed by a legislature that women couldn't vote for. Women showed up to the polls and arrested her. That's supposed to control, that skeleton hand from 1849 is supposed to control 2023. I don't think so. And neither does Janet Protasiewicz. The thing that I am very glad to see is for the last week, starting the day of the election last week, Janet Protasiewicz's campaign has hammered the heck out of Kelly. Modern campaigning, I've got to say, it's very sad. When I first got involved in politics in the 1970s, you ran positive ads. Everybody would go, well, I stand for this or I stand for that. And the lawn signs back then, they were wooden stakes. You'd pound them into the ground, point it on the end, and then you'd staple cardboard over them, and it was a totally different deal. Totally different deal. There's no internet. Totally different. Now, Kelly and the Republicans are savage, are brutal in what they did. You saw what Ron Johnson did with Mandela Barnes, and Mandela was innocent, good man, and he got absolutely slimed to death. Well, Janet Protasiewicz understands what these characters are up to, and she slammed the hell out of Kelly all week with very truthful, factual ads. very truthful, factual ads. And Kelly, at least I don't watch a ton of TV, but I watch the news shows, and I haven't seen a response from him. So he's just wasted a week. There's nothing he can really go against her on. The sliming that they did with Mandela Barnes that doesn't work against her. And now he has 5 weeks to come up with some slime. And he has master slime masters, billionaires pumping money into him. We'll see what happens. But 5 weeks to go. Janet's in very, very good shape. And I don't have to tell you, this audience, the callers, frankly, are the best informed and frankly, the most innovative audience, I think, of any radio show I know. The calls that come in are nuanced and they're thoughtful, and everybody's going to vote. So do not forget to vote April 4 if you're going to be gone traveling. Get down there and vote absentee. Vote absentee by mail. And if you can't do that, go absentee in person. You can do that a couple of weeks before the election. I do that in Milwaukee all the time. I go down to the municipal building. And he goes in. It doesn't matter what ward you're in. And you just give them your name and so forth and show them an ID. They give you a ballot. And you're done. You're golden. Now, don't vote again on election day at your precinct or at your ward, obviously. But you vote once. And a lot of people are doing that. And let's get some votes in the bank. Final thing I'll say is this. I see the word conservative being used by Kelly all over the place in those ads before the primary, and I'm sure you'll see it now. Oh, he's a conservative. There's nothing conservative about gerrymandering. There's nothing conservative about certifying the loser in an election. That's not conservative government. That's commie government. American democracy says certify the candidate who actually won. American democracy says don't rig the seats, don't rig the maps. Make them as much as you can, 50-50 or 47-53. Keep communities of interest together. Don't split Greene County up 7 ways from Sunday. Don't split Sheboygan County 7 ways from Sunday. Don't carve out a few Milwaukee's conservative suburbs on the south and some Waukesha communities to put it in the first congressional district so somebody like the Steele or Style can get elected. Make it communities of interest, like when Les Aspin was the congressman down in Racine and Kenosha and Beloit and Janesville. You know, it wasn't a walk in the park. He had a tough race, but that's what you want, those kinds of seats. Okay, I want to go quickly to Georgia, and this is beyond belief what's happening down there. And it all started with the legislature down there getting the handcuffs taken off them when the U.S. Supreme Court gutted the voting rights bill. By the way, we'll squeeze in a call. I'm going to continue with that subject, but I see Wisco Paul on the line. Thanks for calling, Wisco Paul. What's on your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Hey, good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. The Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin, everything's going to be on the table. Everything Walker did, Kelly's going to say, is going to be taken away, which I think is good, but it can. So there's going to be an awful lot of money spent, and because they don't want to lose control, meaning they, the GOP. So people have to be aware that the number one deal here in the Wisconsin Supreme Court race is fair maps. Without them, we don't have anything. That's all. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Yeah, without that, we have a corrupt gerrymandered legislature. Paul's exactly right. April 4th is the election. Let me get back to Georgia. So here's what the Georgia legislature has just done. They passed a law, which the governor will likely sign. It's a gerrymandered legislature. That said that anybody, one person, can challenge any voter in the state for no reason whatsoever, and that challenge has to be resolved in 10 days. Actually, he did sign it. And you know what they just did? Guess how many challenges they made to individual voters, mostly African-American, virtually all in large Democratic areas like Atlanta. Guess how many? 90,000. Clowns got together and have challenged 90,000 voters by name. And these elections boards, these local elections boards, have to resolve it in 10 days. It's impossible. It's impossible. Then what they have just passed, and this is the one going to the governor's desk, is a law that would remove the neighborhood of Buckhead from Atlanta and make it a separate city. Atlanta has a large African-American population. Buckhead, very affluent area, has a much, much smaller African-American population, and they're just taking Buckhead away. Those two things they just did. Taking Buckhead away from Atlanta and its tax base would be like taking the east side of Milwaukee away from the city of Milwaukee, or taking Whitefish Bay, Shorewood, and Fox Point and Bayside away from Milwaukee County and putting them in Ozaukee County. The idea is to strip the tax base away from the urban part of the city, bankrupt the city. They were not going to get any more money out of the state legislature and really injure Atlanta. That is what is happening. And the idea of 90,000 challenges to individual voters, harmless voters who have no basis for being challenged, these are frivolous. But they have 10 days under the law. Fortunately, the Democratic Party has gone to court down there, and we'll see what happens. But that will cripple, that will absolutely cripple upcoming elections. And then they will claim that all of these voters should cast provisional ballots, which then can be attacked in subsequent lawsuits. This is happening because the six tarantulas on the Supreme Court have gotten rid of most of the Voting Rights Act. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after.
For a long time, sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Before we continue with that last subject, I want to announce some good news. We just learned yesterday that Congresswoman Elisa Slotkin of Michigan will run for the U.S. Senate in Michigan and try to hold Debbie Stabenow's seat. Why is that important? Because we have far more seats. By we, I mean the Democratic Party in 2024. Far more seats up than the Republicans, and some of them are quite difficult. For instance, Manchin's seat in West Virginia. Does he run again? Of course, he hasn't really voted with the Democrats on a lot of things, but he does vote to organize the Senate as a Democrat. Those votes for Schumer for majority leader, and he threw us a vote, a couple of votes on infrastructure, hard and soft. Last time, he only won by 3 percentage points. West Virginia, I think, was second only to Wyoming in the margin that Trump ran up there. So it's not clear what Democrat could hold that seat other than Manchin. So we'll see. He hasn't said whether he'll run again. Another tough one is Arizona. Ruben Gallego is running. I think a lot of Ruben, Marine Corps veteran. I think he's a combat. He is a combat veteran. Good man. Very, very solid guy. Good congressman. He's running. Is Sinema going to run? I don't know. She's now an independent. Does she give us some votes? Yes, she votes to organize the Senate. Votes for Schumer as majority leader. Throws us occasional votes. Frankly, not as many as Manchin. But in a three-way race, Carrie Lake's going to run. Remember her? I mean, she is a real piece of work. If Carrie Lake, Ruben Gallego, in Kyrsten Sinema run. Who wins? It's not a runoff. It's not a jungle primary. It's not something where they the top two then run against each other again. It's not like Georgia, not like Alaska, different kinds of things. This is it, plurality. I don't know if Sinema is going to run again, so stay tuned. So it's important to hold seats like Debbie Stabenow's seat in Michigan and Elisa Slotkin, former CIA officer, very solid, in a very, very tough seat. She represents the area around Michigan State, Lansing, some rural areas to the north. About a third of her district last time was new, very conservative, and yet she won. They like her. I have very high hopes for her. She's 46 years old, and she's very solid. And then another piece of good news in Montana, John Tester is running for re-election. John Tester is a Democrat. Montana is a double-digit Republican state, but they like John Tester, rancher and farmer. Take a look at him. He's a sort of a burly guy with a crew cut and twinkly blue eyes. He looks like he looks like he's out of central casting as a rancher in Montana is what he looks like. I like the guy. I think he's a solid guy. Can he hold it? I hope so. And so, so far, I don't know who would run against him. But if we can hold Montana and Michigan, that's two out of more than 20 that we're going to have to defend, and some very, very tough ones. And then we're going to have to start looking. Jackie Rosen is in Nevada. She's running again. Thank God. She's excellent. Don't know what kind of clowns they'd put up against her. But it's important to keep an eye on all these races, because if Moscow Mitch takes over the Senate and Kevin McCarthy as the House, they'll make it very, very difficult, very difficult. Joe Biden, assuming he gets reelected, which I know he will, and assume he will, to govern for the following 4 years. But I want to get back to what's going on in Georgia, and I'm going to pose a question, and I don't think enough people oppose this question. Who the hell does the Supreme Court think they are to overturn the Voting Rights Act? What is their legitimacy? What is their authority? The six tarantulas. The Voting Rights Act was passed, and there have been amendments going back to the 60s. And the idea was, because in the Jim Crow South in the past, starting in the 1880s, they had a poll tax, something like $2 to vote, which back then was a hell of a lot of money. So black guy shows up, you have $2. They were deterred from voting. And a poor white guy shows up, doesn't have $2. They also had constitutional questions you had to answer. Black guys in line, they say, all right, recite the first 10 amendments to the Constitution and don't miss a word. I couldn't do that and not miss a word. They don't say, well, give us a synopsis. The next guy, they want him to vote. They go, who's the president? That's his question. And then if he gets it wrong, they prompt him. That's what happened. So they passed a constitutional amendment. The U.S. did in the early 60s. Saying poll taxes are illegal. I don't know why they had to pass a constitutional amendment. I don't know why they just didn't say, a federal court didn't say that. However, the Supreme Court is relying on a case that goes back to 1803 called Marbury versus Madison. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson did not envision that the Supreme Court could overturn acts of Congress. The Supreme Court just said they could, and then they lay in the weeds for 50 years. Then they cropped their ugly heads up in the 1850s with the Dred Scott decision and started to shoot their mouths off. And Abraham Lincoln said, no way, Jose. And he enforced the abolition of slavery and reunification of the country, point of a bayonet. Then they lay in the weeds some more. So Plessy v. Ferguson in the 1890s, they lay in the weeds some more. And then they came out and they said, well, the New Deal is unconstitutional. And it took Franklin Roosevelt to beat them back into line. Now these clowns, and, you know, forget the Dodds case. You know, that's a substantial case. But what they're doing now is they're about to decide a case that may deny your right to vote for president directly. And none of these voting rights atrocities that are happening in Texas, Florida, and Georgia would happen if there'd been a Voting Rights Act, because the Voting Rights Act would have required the Justice Department to sign off for them, and they wouldn't have done it. So this is a very legitimate question. Who the hell do they think they are? Why are they legitimate? and I think it's time to question their legitimacy. On a break, the lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after.
In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. The lines are alive. I'm going right to the lines. I'm going to do it in order. Do not hang up. I will get to you. Start out. In order, Andrew of Detroit, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Andrew?
Hey, Professor. I've said it before. I'll say it again. If the people of the state of Wisconsin do not vote correctly for this judge, they could lose their democracy for they don't know how long. You've got to look at your sister state, Michigan, and what we were able to accomplish by voting. And the other thing that's very important, too, is voter initiative, that we were able as citizens to get on the ballot. This whole idea of changing how gerrymandering could be straightened out, and also a woman's right to choose. We were able to put those things on the ballot through voter initiative. When you have Democrats in your state house, you must demand they allow you to put your choices on the ballot. Good luck in the state of Wisconsin, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew, and I'll just respond quickly on that. I agree with you 100%. If we don't elect Janet Protasiewicz, we are going to have gerrymandering for 10 more years. When it comes to initiatives on the ballot, Wisconsin law and Michigan law is different. In Michigan, you're able to do that. Here, it takes the legislature to pass constitutional amendments, and this one's a gerrymandered Republican legislature. And then when it comes to just general resolutions that are non-binding, it's the same through the legislature. What we can do in Wisconsin is have some of those initiatives on county ballots, but frequently a gerrymandered legislature overlooks it. So we don't have all the tools that you have, but we have a Supreme Court, and it would be 4-3 the right way if we get Janet Protasiewicz. Going back to the lines, Bill of Grant County, my friend, thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Bill?
Yeah, I just appreciate your show there, Matt, and I just want to voice my opinion in regards to the Supreme Court, and I hope they overturn and they do not allow the Biden administration to bail out. These people are responsible for their own loans, like I've been responsible my whole life. He's got no business. He's overstepping his boundaries. Thank you, sir.
Bill, thanks a lot for calling in. That's a profound issue, and your point of view is not alone. I'm going to tell you what I think, and it's different from what you said, but it's also different from the Biden proposal, and that's this. Right now, we have a for-profit education industry at the college level, and they will use names like University of Southern New Hampshire. That has nothing to do with the University of New Hampshire, but it sounds good. Or they will call themselves universities. And a lot of times the tuition of students, veterans, and poor kids are being paid by the federal government. Then these diplomas that they get, and they're frequently they're mail order type diplomas, they're online. It's no substitute to in-classroom teaching. The kids, in my view, don't get an effective education. They don't have a job, they can't pay, and now we're supposed to bail them out. Well, here's my view. There should be a law passed that says that if you're a for-profit college like that, you may not use the word university or college. The words university and college go back 1,000 years in Europe. They actually go back 2,300 years to the Academy, Plato, and Aristotle. and it's not, it's deceptive marketing. They may not use, according to the law that I propose, a state's name, any state. You could say the University of Central Wisconsin. Everybody thinks, oh, I got a degree from the UW system. No, you didn't. That should stop. Third, the United States should not pay the tuition at these for-profit universities of veterans and poor kids, okay? They shouldn't pay for it. They should say, you want to do it? You know what you do is, in Milwaukee, go to UWM. You're going to get a world-class education, or MATC. In Madison, go to the Madison Area Technical College, or UW-Madison, and the same around the state. A lot of this money, much of the money that's being spent is going to these for-profit outfits. These kids are not getting the right education, and it all depends on their zeal and following up online. So that's what I think, Bill, okay? That's what I think. If people had debts from, say, UWM, Madison Area Technical College, Milwaukee Area Technical College, UW-Madison, and so on, and it can be private colleges, too. It can be Marquette University, Concordia University, Alberta, and so on. Fine. But they should be legitimate universities or colleges that use the word, meaning it, that it is a university or college. That's what I think. I'm really glad you called in. That's a very, very interesting issue. Going back to the lines, do not hang up. I'll take you in order. Jack of Merrimack, you're next, my friend. What's on your mind today, Jack?
Well, what you were just talking about. Here are some facts, and I'm sure you realize these. I don't know if everybody else does. Public colleges and universities in Wisconsin especially, but in many, many other states, used to be supported because they wanted an education, an educated population that was capable of working in a modern world and also capable of critical thinking and making good decisions. In the guise of smaller government and so-called school choice, our Republican politicians have cut funding for these universities and public schools. They've taken these public funds, and as you know, as you just pointed out, they've used them to support private, parochial, and for-profit schools. Now, when I'm an old guy, but when I went to school, for about $1,000 a year, you could pay for tuition, books, room, and board. Now, that was a while ago. My son's cost at a UW system school for tuition alone will exceed, tuition and books alone, will exceed about $50,000. Now, he's lucky. His mom and I can afford to pay that amount for him. But not everybody can, and especially given what's happened to the middle class in the last 40 years. Literally millions of students who get a job in a good field can't pay off their loans, even though they're absolutely necessary to enter those fields. And we absolutely need workers. We need nurses. We need teachers. You know, fields that don't pay terrifically. And we need people that are educated. And they can't pay these loans off sometimes for decades. Many, many people today, millions, are still paying off college loans from 10, 15, 20 years ago. You know, if you're lucky, you're born into the right family like my son, somebody paid off your education. You chose a field that was so good that you could pay it off in a reasonable time. Good for you, but not everybody gets into those jobs. And not only that, we need people in some of the other jobs. You already paid off your student loans. You think it's unfair for somebody to be forgiven even a part of their cost because that's not nearly the whole amount. I'd call that jealousy. We need people in those fields. And unlike Europe, unlike Canada, we don't have schools and universities that many people can afford. We need to support those people as well. The money wasn't given up front to pay for the universities, so it's got to be given, at least some of it's got to be given, to help the students pay off those costs.
Right. I think you're raising important. Yeah, you're raising important points. And let me just build on that in this. I do not think that these for-profit universities, A, should be able to use the word university or college. B, they should not be able to use a state name or a part of a state name. And C, the federal government should not pay any tuition to these for-profit schools that call themselves universities or colleges, period, end of story. For the nonprofits, the ones that are legitimate, whether public or private, I think that the kids' tuitions, and I'm going to address the deeper issue that you raised shortly, the kids' tuitions are ones that, for instance, veterans and needy kids, government assistance, these are legitimate, not-for-profit colleges. Usually state universities are a handful of private colleges that are legitimate universities and colleges, and we have some here in the state, like Marquette, like Concordia, like Alverno, those kinds of colleges are legitimate. Now, I'm going to go further. When I went to the UW, Madison, to law school in the early 70s, my tuition was $250 a semester. That's because the state provided 47% of the operating budget of the university. I had friends that went in the early 60s and they paid $100 a semester. Right now, the state pays 17% of the operating budget. It should be increased. That those expenses have got to come down, number one. Number two, under Scott Walker, the Republicans have attacked higher education in this state. They attack tenure. They attack shared governance. They attack the idea of even needing a college education. This is wrong. A college education and even more education beyond that, the more you can get, is desirable, not just from a utilitarian point of view, but because to fill you out as a citizen with a full knowledge of your rights and of history is essential. Thanks for calling. We'll talk about this some more. I'm going to get as many of you in as I can this segment and the next. Todd or Billy, my friend, you're next. Thanks for calling. What's your mind, Todd or Billy?
Hey, what's on my mind is what you've been talking about, and your last caller and yourself just covered some of the things I wanted to say. But an additional thing that I'm curious about is, if it's my understanding that you can't get rid of student debt through bankruptcy, and that's kind of different than most other kinds of debt. And again, that, you know, that seems like very unfair to middle-class people, you know, business owners or folks with other sorts of debt can go through bankruptcy, but I don't. My understanding is you can't with student loans, and that to me is terrible, and that should be fixed as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, and that is true, because that was lobbied by the banks who wanted to be able to go after you the rest of your life. I think an easy fix is this. You can declare bankruptcy, especially if it is a for-profit college, because they should not be able to use the word university or college. They should not be able to use a state name, and they should not get federal money, and therefore you should be able to declare bankruptcy. I think it's a great idea. Gene of Eau Claire, my friend, thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Gene?
Good afternoon. Great show as always, Matt. Outstanding callers. I just want to remind people that, you know, we can't help out the young people in our country, especially when we went through a pandemic and we've had all kinds of issues in our country that have affected people's ability to earn a living, pay back loans, things like that, or even participate in their schools. Oh, and besides that, you better have a good insurance policy with all the AK rifles out there that are going into schools, and Republicans won't do anything about it. I just had to throw that in. Remember the big tax cuts for the wealthiest people in our country that were not paid for, and they're complaining about helping out people with student loan debts, these people who are trying to get good jobs, do things in our communities. So I just wanted to throw that in. Thanks, Matt. Keep up the great work.
Yeah, no, that's very good stuff. Thanks very, very much for calling on all of that. And then just to wrap up the segment from some of the callers about education, this continual attack by the Republican Party on higher education is hypocritical. DeSantis attacks it, and he went to Yale undergrad and Harvard Law School. All of these guys went to premier colleges, and then they lie and say you don't need it, and they do everything in their power to denigrate it and make it hard for you to go. That is wrong. They want to keep you in the dark on your rights and on history. The theme of this Matt Flynn Direct is you're not woke if you don't know history, and you're not going to know history if you don't do some reading on history, and it's good to have education. The more education you can get, the better. I don't care if your parents or you have it. Make sure your kids do. And make sure it goes on to the graduate level. We'll talk about that some more. It's just wrong what the Republicans are doing. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Maybe it's only yesterday. In the year 2525, if man is still alive, if woman can survive, they may.
Well, I won't back down. No, I won't.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I want to talk about Ukraine. I am tired of the Republican Party, the Treason Caucus. It's not the whole Republican Party. Moscow Mitch has stood up for Ukraine. Some of the Texas congressmen have stood up for Ukraine. Not all of them. I'm going to tell you something. You have Donald Trump, the Treason Caucus, Gates, Marjorie Taylor Greene. DeSantis is going along with it, saying, well, we got to rethink this. This is treason. And let me tell you some facts. This is not a war between Russia and Ukraine. This is a genocide. Russia has 145 million people. Ukraine has a little over 40 million, and 11 million of them are refugees. 8 million outside of the Ukraine borders, 3 million internally in Ukraine. They're fighting magnificently, but if you have a war of attrition, a genocide of attrition, the Russians are getting creamed. They're losing 200,000 people. They don't care, because every time you lose a Ukrainian, they can lose three Russians, and they do not care. Volodymyr Zelensky said today that the situation in Bakhmut, which is a city in the east of it that used to have 70,000 people in it, is getting more and more difficult. The Ukrainians are magnificent. But the fact is, here's what the Russians are doing. Coming Ruskies. They're going in and just destroying the whole country, the whole infrastructure, every building in a city, every building in a city. They are doing this. They are animals. They are an animal culture that do not deserve to survive. Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of the Wagner Group. Now, listen to this. And his people are getting hit hard by the Ukrainians. When they capture Ukrainians, they will rape them. They will sexually mutilate them, men and women. What he has done is he is fighting the military hierarchy, of the Russians, because his people are doing most of the fighting, most of the genociding. Yesterday, he threatened, quote, to sexually assault and beat to death with a sledgehammer the son-in-law of the defense secretary of Russia, Shoigu, Sergei Shoigu. He's not actually a son-in-law. It's the partner of Shoigu's daughter. And because he's not in the Russian military, he said, I will sexually assault him and beat him to death with a sledgehammer. This man is an animal. Prigozhin's an animal, not a human being. He should be euthanized. Putin is the same way. Putin is a cancerous tumor on the behind of humanity. He's got to be euthanized. Now, I'm saying this with extravagant terms because this is radio and I'm not in the State Department. But I'll tell you this, most people in the State Department think the same way, and they have a more felicitous way of delivering this message. Some people who consider themselves experts and pundits, they call it a war, an invasion, that Russia's taking, quote, heavy losses. There'll have to be a solution. Take a look at a map of Ukraine and the Black Sea. You cannot have a peaceful solution and a negotiation with Hitler. And Putin is Hitler. If they keep Crimea, the only port left that leads onto the Black Sea, where the Ukrainians could ship grain and so forth, and any of their products is Odessa. And then the Russians have already said they want to take Odessa, and they have a fleet in the Black Sea. And if a Ukrainian grain ship went out, it would be destroyed or confiscated. Some people in our State Department think, well, and in the Republican Party, well, we can get a, quote, agreement, end quote, from, quote, Putin, end quote, i.e. Hitler, to stop doing it in the future. He won't stop doing it in the future. He will continue to recruit recruits whom he can bully and push around and get killed. And when he replenishes his arms, he'll do it again. Some people say, well, let's give up. Let's have the Ukrainians give up Crimea and the Donbass, and the rest of Crimea can come into the EU and can come into NATO. That would be vetoed by Turkey. But even if they did come into NATO, there was a thing called the Budapest Accords. I don't know if you remember that from the early 90s. And when Ukraine gave up its nuclear weapons, the UK, the United States, and Russia guaranteed Ukraine's boundaries. Then when Russia invaded Ukraine, when they went into Crimea in 2014, the position of the United States was, well, that wasn't a treaty ratified by the Senate. That was a foreign policy, and we will certainly stand by Ukraine, but Obama didn't send them any weapons at all, none whatsoever. Not a single Stinger or Javelin when the Ruskies went into Crimea. And emboldened by that, and they made a mistake thinking that Biden would be the same way, and of course he was not. The objective of the United States, everybody's saying, oh, well, Russia can't be beaten because then they'll somehow be backed into a corner, may use nuclear weapons. They're not going to use nuclear weapons. In Russia, it takes two people to sign off on Putin's doing it, even if he decides to commit suicide by cop. At some point, we have got to go in and kill this guy. Now, it's easier to have the Ukrainians do it. They have been successful in launching drones deep into Russia. Give them his coordinates at any given time. Give Yevgeny Prigozhin's coordinates at any given time. Give them 190-mile HIMARS. Give them F-16 jets. You have got to stop them and protect them. Right now, they are about to buy more drones from Iran, and they may send in return jets to Iran. And if that happened, and long-term missile technology, Israel is going to have no choice but to bomb Tehran. We have got to step in. And if we're going to bomb Tehran, we should do it ourselves. That's an animal state that is a threat to world peace. Russia is an animal state, a terrorist state, and a threat to world peace. And it's as simple as that. You cannot negotiate with these people. It's not a war. It's a genocide. They are sadists. They are perverts. And this has got to stop. There are many fine people in Russia. I've met some of them. Been to Moscow, been to St. Petersburg. They will do nothing to rein in Stalin. They didn't in the past. Nothing to rein in Lenin. And now they will do nothing to rein in Putin. They've got to stop. They only understand force. Coming to the end of the show. Got a little carried away. I feel very deeply about this. Matt Flynn Direct. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Excellent quality as always. Signing off for today. There ain't no easy way out. Hey, I will stand my ground, and I won't back down. No, I won't back down.